Welcome to episode 45 of the Robot Report podcast, which brings conversations with robotics innovators straight to you. I'm Steve Crow, editorial director of the Robot Report. Thanks as always, folks, for tuning in. You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcast. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, give us a review. A very special edition of the podcast today, the RBR 50 edition of the podcast. If you don't know what the RBR 50 is, it's our annual innovation awards produced by Robotics Business Review. It's been around for, I think, about a dozen years or so. It honors technology, business, and market innovations in the global robotics industry. We have links, folks, in the show notes if you want to check out all the winners, or you can check out roboticsbusinessreview.com. Right now, it's the main story on the site. It's also in the main navigation, so you really can't miss it. But again, if you haven't checked it out, we'll include some links to it in the show notes. So today, we'll be taking you behind the scenes of the process that we go through to pick the winners. We'll talk to you about what we determine, consider to be innovation. We'll share some of our personal favorite winners as well. And to do that, I'm joined by the other judges in the contest, Dan Cara and Mike Oitzman of WTWH's Robotics Group. Gentlemen, a round of applause. We've made it out the other side. Dan, how are you doing? What were your overall thoughts on the contest this year?
Well, I mean, I thought we had a large number of submissions, many, many more than we've had last year. So that was one thing. And then there was just simply a broader range in terms of the country of origin. So I think that was the two indicators that I saw from the 2021 RBR 50 Robotics Innovation Awards.
Yeah, we'll break down some of those numbers in a bit. Almost 200 entries, Dan. So certainly I've been involved with this for a number of years, as have you. Certainly by far the most I've ever had entries wise. And Mike, your initiation to not only the editorial group this year, but to the RBR 50 Innovation Awards, your takeaways from the contest and the process itself.
Well, hey, it was fun adventure. It was, I think, just spectacular to read through all of the submissions, to take a look at all of the innovation that's happening across all the segments of the industry. And I think that's one of the things that I observed in this process, is that, you know, coming into this organization, right, I've had my head down looking primarily at mobile robots, but you know, the last 3 months since I joined the team, it's been a chance for me to pop my head up and look at all of the other automation areas, fixed automation and the rest that's happening across the industry. And this was really an opportunity to celebrate and to look at all of the other innovation that's happening.
Yeah.
I think it's important to note that there were certainly a large number of submissions, but also we took into consideration other innovations from other companies that did not submit.
Correct.
We ourselves thought were worthy of consideration and inserted those into the process. So it went beyond just the formal submittals or formal submissions to include other companies and other innovations.
Yeah, a couple that come to mind for me. AutoX and Waymo, Dan, those are two examples. Both those companies have public robo-taxi services that are up and running. Waymo, of course, the first in the world to ever do that with its Waymo One service in the Phoenix metro area. AutoX is based in China, and they have a similar service up and running in Shenzhen. But that's a great point. And another thing, Dan, that we should clarify for folks, these innovations that won for this year's contest, there was a time frame that we put on it, right? So the innovations they needed to be initiated, released, or executed between January 1st, 2020 and April 1st, 2021. So when some folks reach out to us and ask about, you know, how come I didn't win? Well, oftentimes that's the case, right? Their innovation is tremendous, but it just fell outside of the timeline. And also there's only 50 spots, right? So, but let's start here. You know, Dan, Mike, and I are each going to get into some of the companies that we were really impressed with this year. But I think, Dan, let's turn to you so that you can sort of give your take on, you know, what it is that we consider to be innovation. Take us through the process a little bit, you know, just because, again, this is the second year that the RBR 50 has been done under the WTWH Media umbrella. Of course, we acquired Robotics Business Review and its assets a couple of years ago. You started Robotics Business Review a long time ago now. So And under your leadership a couple of years ago, we kind of revamped what this RBR 50 Robotics Innovation Awards program was. So why don't you just sort of, again, for folks who don't know, take us through the genesis of this program.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we, WTWH Robotics Group, we acquired Robotics Business Review, and came with that was the Robotics Innovation Awards. They might've been titled something at that different time. And so when we looked at that, what I there was a couple of things that we wanted to do with it to take it kind of into the 2020s and make it more relevant and appropriate. And one of those things is we wanted to have a focus not so much on products and companies, but on innovation. And they can take that form in terms of product, what companies do and what products are, certainly. But we wanted to broaden that a little bit to celebrate robotics innovation in all its forms. And the reason we wanted to focus on our innovation was based on a lot of work that I had done in the past, and then realized it was really innovation that was driving this, and this innovation could be of multiple types. So, you know, the reason why is because innovation is just critical to growing the sector. But it's made up of different determinants. There's technological innovation, there could be business innovation, there could be market innovation, and these things act in confluence to kind of drive the sector overall. So in 2020, beginning last year, we broadened that to include basically three large groupings of innovation forms. There was business and management innovation. So these are business and management initiatives or their practices that really enhances a company's commercial standing, and it drives the robotics sector, and or it improves society, or a combination of all those things. The second would be technology products and services innovation. So this is what people typically think in terms of innovation, and they usually think in terms of technology and products and not services. So we extended it there. So these would be new commercial solutions that have the potential to impact markets or drive the robotics sector or drive a company's growth. And then the third was application and market innovation. So these are very sector specific. So these can be things such as newly developed applications that deliver high levels of business value. They can do things like provide a company entree into new markets. They can improve performance over existing approaches if you're using for an application. So those things such as reducing costs or improving quality or increasing productivity and those types of things. So those are sort of the three large buckets. There are multiple sub buckets to each of those things. And when we go through the process of looking these, and like we said, we had over 200 submissions. We had a large number of submissions that we included ourselves as people who are deeply neck deep in this marketplace. So we looked at a couple of different kind of selection criteria or determinants. So some of the things, this is being Robotics Business Review, we looked at and said, well, does this product or service or technology provide business value? Or does this business or management innovation provide business value, or the market or application innovation? And then there's also the issue of, well, what level of innovation? So is it just, say, a point build over an existing product, or is it something completely new? And if it is something completely new, is it transformational in some ways as to that particular company's progress, or for the sector as a whole, or for in other ways? We also looked at the engineering involved and the functionality that this particular innovation provides. So again, is it just the counter example would be something where it's a product where they just make a smaller version of it or a larger version of it, and really the engineering basically stays the same. So we looked at those things and gave higher levels of credence to those things that demonstrated a different level of engineering. We also looked at whether the product was unique or the service was unique. How different is this from the other things that are out there coming from their competitors or in the marketplaces in other geographic areas? So is it unique as well? Another one was commercial viability. There's a lot of products in the robotics space, not a whole lot, I would say. In many of them we've seen come and go. There's a large number of them. And so they were a great idea. They might have had great technology and great vision. The companies might have been funded well, but frankly, the products were not commercially viable. And we're a little bit soft around the edges on that. So for example, if to compare something that provides a large degree of social good and is less commercially viable or has less ability to generate large amounts of revenue or to scale, well, we take that into consideration. Another issue was the level and degree of applicability. Can this innovation, this product, this service, this technology, this business innovation, or this application or market innovation, can it be applied broadly, or is it really, really narrow? And then there's issues related to aesthetics and design. We see a lot of stuff coming out of the labs that simply aren't ready for commercial use yet, or to be able to be introduced into the commercial marketplace, because they frankly look ugly, or they're difficult to use, or whatever. So we look at the aesthetics and design. And then also those products and services and technologies and business issues that provide a positive social impact. That's another thing that we look at. And then, of course, whether that innovation falls between January 1st, 2020 and then April 1st, 2021. So we take all of those things into consideration. So what you can see is this is highly subjective. What we try to do is introduce or interject some degree of a formal process based on some of those determinants I just described, and to come up with those top 50 for that particular for that particular year.
So we're not just throwing darts against the wall is what I is
no
what I
we're not just throwing darts against the wall. And then also there's you could just, for example, pick the robotics company that sold the most robots particular year, and they get an award. Well, if it's the same robot that they've been selling, that's not really innovation. It might be great market execution, and in that way, it might be considered something that would be a business innovation or management innovation. But that, it has to be more than that. So again, it's this sort of melange of different types of things. We try to add some sort of formalization about it. We go through this process that we've worked over the last couple of years, and we'll improve that and change it over time for sure. But to wring out some of the subjectivity and to provide a real insight of where this marketplace is at this time, because the RBR 50 is an indicator of the robotic sector, how fast it's growing and how robust it is, and innovation certainly in the sector.
No coincidence, Mike, that you're taking a vacation day tomorrow.
Yeah, right. need a little bit of mental break.
So we're not going to run through all 50 companies again. We'll include some links to the winners in the show notes here, and we'll get to our personal favorites, I guess we'll call them, in a few minutes. But just to break down the 50 winners based on the categories that Dan just shared, 27 companies were honored for some sort of new product, service, or technology. 20 companies honored for a new application or market innovation, and 3 companies were honored for their business and management prowess. So maybe a little bit heavy on the new product, services, and technologies. But Dan, one thing I want to also get your thoughts on, and one thing that I thought we greatly improved upon this year, was the internationalization of the list. Last year, 2020, only 8 countries were represented, and just 11 companies were based outside of the U.S. So that was a conscious thing that we all wanted to improve upon. So this year, there were 20 winners based outside of the U.S., and 14 countries were represented. I'm just going to go through these because I think there's some pretty interesting companies on here. Australia, Canada, China, Denmark, France, Germany, Israel, Netherlands, New Zealand, Singapore, the robotics powerhouse known as Slovakia, South Korea, United Kingdom, and of course, the U.S. So again, Dan, I think a pretty good job, and rightfully so. There's a lot of robotics clusters and powerhouses located around the world.
Yes, I would make note of the fact that, the fact that this innovation came from another country wasn't a determinant. What we did is actually made the solicitation process, sent that out to a wider range of people. So, that when we looked at it, where it actually came from, what country it came from, wasn't a determinant. What was the determinant were those other factors I named a little bit earlier. But what we did do is make people more broadly aware of the RBR 50 Robotics Innovation Awards, and that these in fact are global awards. And that led to that increased number of international honorees.
Couple other quick numbers here to go over. 15 states were represented in the U.S. 30 winners overall in the U.S. California by far had the most winners in the U.S. with 15 companies. Massachusetts, Ohio, and Pennsylvania each had two winners. There were five repeat honorees from 2020. A couple of my favorite companies here, Boston Dynamics and Waymo, as well as Shunk, Sick, and Universal Robots. And congrats to Universal Robots. This was the 10th time in the last 11 years that they've made the list. They won this year for their Actinav bin picking kit. But Mike, one thing I want to get your thoughts on, I know this is a market that you follow closely, and you had some notes here about the number of warehouse automation providers that were on this year's list.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's significant that, that we had six, by my count, warehouse solution providers included in this year's cohort of winners. And that includes the companies at Envia Robotics, FedEx, Great Orange, Ambi Robotics, AutoStore, and Material Handling Systems. And, you know, I think that, again, speaks to the fact that the impact that the pandemic had last year and the pivot that a lot of companies made, both in product as well as business-wise, to, you know, respond to the increase in the fulfillment chain. And, you know, it's really it's the fuel that's been poured on the warehouse automation market. So I think that's significant. I think we're going to be watching the impact of that now for the next couple of years.
We might have to throw one more in there. Dan is going to get into them later. BMW Idealworks. I know they develop an AMR that's used for what, Dan? I know I would assume supply chain's on there.
They developed it for their own internal use initially, yeah, and then spun it out as a separate company. And I'll talk about that a little bit later.
But that is one of the big changes for this year. Last nugget here before we get into our companies that we want to highlight. But last year, there were nine companies on the list that developed AMRs, primarily for, you know, logistics and supply chain. This year, only three, I believe, BMW Idealworks, Gray Orange, and Envia Robotics. You know, AutoStore is an ASRS system technically. But what do you guys, Mike, maybe we'll start with you. What do you guys attribute that to? I mean, for me, with the e-commerce growth, you know, significantly fueled by the COVID-19 pandemic, are these companies more focused on deploying the AMRs that they have and scaling their deployments and fleets rather than, you know, coming up with brand new innovations? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Everybody that I talk to from this market is just heads down now. Their problem is building enough systems to meet demand. So, and if you go look at all of their websites, everybody's hiring, you know, production related, you know, functions to get equipment built and get it deployed and get it serviced.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna do our favorite companies here. We're gonna go in alphabetical order. So we're gonna go with Dan, Mike, and then I'll chime in with mine at the end. So Dan, just let's start with you. Walk us through some of the companies that really impressed you this year.
Sure. I'll go with three. I was really impressed with Qualcomm's RB5 platform. This is you know, it's an AI enabled 5G robotics platform. Has hardware, software, integrated development tools, all optimized for different classes of robotic systems and drones. And they say it could be consumer, commercial, defense, industrial. It's available in multiple options, several different sort of systems on a chip and module designs you can use. So, you know, this is not unique to Qualcomm, the kind of providing these comprehensive development environments with robotics chipsets. And we've seen similar approaches from folks like NVIDIA with their Jetson family in the high end, the Xavier NX and their Isaac SDK. There's a company called FastSense Robotics. A lot of this stuff is tuned to have machine learning on the edge for both inferencing and now even beyond just limited to inferencing. But, you know, there were capabilities that differentiated the RB5 from competitive solutions. I mean, it's extremely feature rich. It's highly integrated. You know, Qualcomm has developed a lot of these technologies in different type of marketplaces, and they're able to just kind of scale them and move them out. Now, when you first look at this, the RB5 could just be considered as an upgrade from Qualcomm's RB3 platform. That was released in 2019. The RB5 was released in 2020. And so, yes, it has multiple incremental improvements over the RB3, but it has more cameras, extra processing power for machine learning and computer vision stuff. But it has whole range of new features. One of the most critical was support for both 4G LTE and then 5G connectivity via companion model. So this makes the RB5 really suitable for drones and robots deployed outdoors, where you want high-end compute at the edge, you want 5G for low latency and security, and these things are critical for features such as perception and localization, mapping and navigation. So that was one of my favorite, and we'll continue to see upgrades from both Qualcomm and NVIDIA and these other players to provide many options. So it's just, there's many more options out there. These are extremely feature rich, and the RB5 caught my eye for sure. The second one was BMW Group, and they launched a separate company called Idealworks, which was pretty, but that it had more kind of oomph to it than just that. So, in 2020, they launched this wholly owned subsidiary named Idealworks, where Ideal was standing for Industry-Driven Engineering for Autonomous Logistics. There's a mouthful. So Idealworks was formed from BMW's logistics innovation team. So over a period of 5 years, they had developed the smart transport robot, the STR. I think they were working with Fraunhofer Institute in order to do that. They're working with technology partner NVIDIA to do that. And they developed a number of different platforms and solutions, autonomous mobile robots, really optimized for intralogistics work in BMW's automotive factory. Well, these that they call them STRs, these STRs, particularly one of them in particular, it was just called the STR. It's now been renamed IW.hub. I'm not quite sure why, but it doesn't really roll.
Man, these names just roll right off the tongue, huh?
Yeah. The first time I heard it, I'm like, what? So they've been using it. It was used at several BMW production plants prior to the founding of Idealworks. But in 2020, they made IW.hub commercially available outside of BMW. So what does this mean? Why was it selected? So the Idealworks founding and then the IW.hub commercialization really shows and demonstrates business leadership at a number of different levels. BMW leveraged the company's internal domain expertise in logistics, particularly related to automotive, and develop a solution really optimized for automotive manufacturing. And that BMW actually thought, they looked at the third-party solutions that were out there for AMRs, and they didn't think they were suitable. They thought they were lacking in functionality. So they just built their own using their own internal expertise. They spun off Idealworks, they commercialized IW.hub, and what happened was BMW's AMR Skunkworks goes from being a revenue sink to a revenue source in a really, really hot market, the AMR marketplace. So Idealworks, as noted, that intends to broaden its AMR offerings, targeting applications outside logistics and possibly industries outside of automotive. So this opens up further opportunities for additional growth and systems development, and they can form new partnerships. So all the while this is going on, Idealworks benefits from a mother country BMW group where they can experiment. So you're dealing, your mother company is a global manufacturing business, right? And they'll provide a source for innovation or a driver for innovation. You can test things. There's in-house proof of concepts and testing. So it all just kind of plays together. So it sets itself up so that, BMW helps itself, and it now becomes a major AMR player.
This reminds me a lot about, and maybe you guys disagree, but sort of along the lines of what Amazon has done with Amazon Robotics, right? There was a great piece on the news just the other night highlighting some of the robotic systems that Amazon uses within its own logistics operations. And they had an AGV and an AMR and some other items that they were highlighting. Of course, the difference here is, you know, Amazon Robotics does not sell its robots outside of Amazon, right? It's its only customer, but sort of reminded me of this when we were reading through and evaluating that one, sort of reminded me of what, you know, how Amazon and Amazon Robotics works.
Yeah. You know, one of the reasons I looked at that, the fact that they are not going to just limit it internally. And you start thinking about the automotive industry, it's actually not as stovepipes as you would think. So in many cases, you'll have competing companies developing parts like body and white solutions for their competitors, basically.
Right.
And they offer that as a service, and that's another way for them to make money. So, you know, I can see this would be basically kind of tangential to that, that they're developing these solutions. And the fact that there's indications that they might move outside of automotive is also interesting. I don't know what this means for the AMR industry. I mean, here you have a large multinational, and unlike some of the other AMR players out there, we certainly have partnerships. I mean, the difference here is the partnership is literally the same company. So, you know, they're not partnering with a large multinational. They are part of a large multinational.
Right.
And it might give them a little bit of an edge.
Scaling, in terms of manufacturing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, let's go back to our history in the industrial robotics space. You know, Seiko Epson's a perfect example of a manufacturer that developed an automation arm and then began to sell to the general market as well. So, you know, there's history.
Yeah.
For that kind of evolution.
And maybe a competitive advantage. I mean, they don't have to go out and look for funding for their next, you know, if they want to move internationally with this particular product or offering, they don't have to go look through the VC community for additional funding to take their products and services globally, for example. You know, they're working with a global company already. The money is not a problem. So, you know, it does give you a number of key advantages.
Before you move on to your next one, I just want to plug the RBR50 again, folks. One thing that we did for all these companies, should have noted this off the top, is we wrote a description piece about what their entry and submission was, and we wrote an analysis portion for each of these 50 companies as to why this is so innovative, why it's important, and why they're a winner. So again, if you haven't checked out the digital edition of the RBR50 or the online version for all the winners, again, I highly encourage you to do that. And we'll, again, have some links to both of those in the show notes. So Dan, what's your third company?
Sure. It's actually a combination of University of Michigan and Ford Motor Company. So, you know, in March of this year, 2021, they held the grand opening of the Ford Motor Company Robotics Building. So this is, you know, a four-story building, $75 million, 135,000 square feet. It's a robotics research complex. So the first three floors will house the University of Michigan robotics research laboratories. And then the fourth floor will lodge Ford's first robotics and mobility research lab on a university campus. So that'll include 100 Ford roboticists, as well as autonomous vehicle researchers. So, you know, this is a good thing. So when I look at this, you say, well, the state of Michigan is the headquarters for car manufacturers like Ford and General Motors, as well as a lot of these kind of tier ones automotive systems and component suppliers. And they all of them rely heavily on robotic automation. I mean, the automotive industry in terms of industrial robotics, the history is well known there. And if you go back not too many years, you're talking about, you know, 90% of all industrial robots being sold into the automotive sector. That's changed over time, certainly electronics and a number of other industries now. So it's much more democratic in that sense. But at one time it was, you know, automotive manufacturers and that's it. So it's really no surprise that the University of Michigan, who has a couple of other research facilities in terms of robotics, it would land this Ford Motor Company one. They have something called MAIR, which is a research facility focused on autonomy and collaborative robots. They have something at University of Michigan has something called M-City, which some of you might have seen pieces on, where it's a testing ground for autonomous vehicles. I mean, you know, prior to even getting this Ford research facility, it was really well regarded as, you know, this is a world-class center for robotics and autonomy research. Well, so you know, there's that. So, but beyond that, I mean, it really, it enhances the area as a reputation as a major robotics innovation cluster. So, you know, that area in Michigan is now a world-class cluster.
Gives the researchers more access to state-of-the-art facilities, right? Where, you know, to test right. their systems and sort of recreate some of these real-world environments.
Exactly. And then, as we all know, the basis for all of this stuff that we're talking about, or most of it, is university-level research. Certainly you get research at large corporations and all the rest of it, but for a lot of the really innovative work, the work where there's no, you know, there is no dollar amount that you're going to generate attached to it, at least initially, it occurs at, you know, academic journal level research at universities. And then once you build around there, there tends to be in many cases, that the new companies that will spin out will be located in that area where many of these people did their research, either as PhDs or young postdocs or whatever. And then certainly also it gives the undergraduates an opportunity to actually interact with these research centers and sort of feeds, you know, you're feeding this whole pipeline of people who are possible entrepreneurs as well as just workers. So it helps that cluster. The work at this Ford Motor Company robotics building will generate the new robotics capabilities and technologies. So again, fundamental and applied research. And there's this other kind of touchy feeling thing that I just alluded to. It'll really facilitate robotics innovation through these other types of things that you don't typically think about. So technology transfer activities, networking events, and then, of course, the education of the next generation of robotics researchers, engineers, and entrepreneurs. So when we think in terms of the RBR 50 Innovation Awards, you think in terms of those things that will drive the robotics sector. This is a great example of something that will drive the robotics sector for decades to come.
I think I got to go back to college, University of Michigan. This place is unbelievable. We have a virtual walkthrough of the facility on therobotreport.com if you guys want to check it out. But just a fascinating facility. They have they call it a robot playground for bipedal robots with stairs and treadmills and all sorts of things. A three-story fly zone to test out drones and aerial vehicles. A Mars yard. I'm a big, and I know Mike is as well, yes. space robotics fan, but right. a Mars yard designed to test, navigation systems and landing concepts. And I guess it mimics the Martian surface. So just an incredible, incredible facility. So
just a big, big robotics jungle gym.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yes.
So if you want to, if you haven't seen it yet, head to therobotreport.com. There's all sorts of video walkthroughs of the facility, as well as a 3D model of the Ford Motor Company robotics building at the University of Michigan. So with that, we're going to turn to you now for your three most innovative companies to review this year.
Well, thanks. And, these three companies that I'm going to talk about are all just completely different. Markets, different things. But these are hit my list for the top three most fun and novel and interesting to review this year in the list that I was responsible for. And I think the first point that I'll make is that, look, I live in the California gold country. I live in the part of California that has been around, probably was the most populated part of the country, the state 150 years ago. And this first company is a company called Orica. They are also a 150-year-old mining technology company, but based in Australia. And they were founded in 1874 as a supplier of explosives for the Victorian gold fields in Australia. And I guess looking at their history, during the Australian gold rush, they became the largest dynamite provider. That's their background. And if you fast forward to today, they're a billion-dollar plus company. They are one of the biggest mining supply companies, certainly in Australia, if not worldwide. And their innovation really is that, one of the most dangerous mining processes underground is loading dynamite into the wall before you blow a wall and then remove all the ore. And so what they've done
You don't want to do that job, Mike, Dan?
Yeah, I don't think I'd. That sounds like a high-risk job, right? So what they've done is they've mechanized this process, what they call blast hole charging. And this machine that they've developed, so I describe it in my response is sort of a mechanized incarnation of Edward Scissorhands. And if you can imagine, it's got all of these valves and these two-handed gripper that they use to load the dynamite and then put the charge cable behind it and then backfill it with some epoxy so that it's highly focused. And it's all this machine now is operated by a single operator who's multiple yards away now from the rock face and never actually handles the physical dynamite anymore. And it's just a fascinating example of automating a dirty and dangerous job in an operation that very few of us will ever see or witness, but can imagine how it's, you know, it's changing that industry. So that was my first one. I thought that was a really interesting rabbit hole to go down.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. To your point, perfect use case, right? Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So now when we go to the other side of the planet, my number two is an Israeli-based company called Tevel, and get this, Tevel Aerobotics. So they've created a new market segment for drone-based robotics, and so that's the name of the company. And they have innovated in the fruit harvesting space, so it's an ag tech company. And those that are following me on the Mobile Robot Guide know that I'm pretty keen for a lot of the ag tech innovation that's happening. But this is a drone-based fruit harvesting application. And I think part of the innovation here is that they're using tethered drones. So these drones are attached by a tether to a mobile platform with a huge battery in it. These drones can operate all day, so they never have to stop and recharge.
Never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
No, so, I haven't either.
So it's something out of Star Wars almost that you know, these tethered drones fly up. They've got a camera and AI and a gripper at the end of the drone platform. And basically they identify the ripe fruit with their AI vision algorithm. And then they fly in and they grab the fruit off the ripe fruit off the tree. And then the gripper has this little rotational twisting motion to pull the fruit off the tree. And then it flies down and drops it in the movable bin. So just totally innovative. A lot of people have tried solving, fruit picking, and that still remains a very difficult problem, both for the AI, but to use drones and to put it on, fruit, I think is very interesting. Look, they've started with apples. I would imagine because apples are pretty robust fruit to acquire. So a little bit more forgiving than some of the other fruits. So that's been their primary market segment, but they're looking to expand now beyond apples to peaches, nectarines, plums, and apricots. And they've been piloting this in Israel. But the other thing that they're doing now is they're expanding to Spain, the fruit orchards in Spain here in the coming year. So that was a very interesting innovation.
I think you just hit an important point for me. Anyways, the fact that they're based in Israel, right? That's Israel's a vision powerhouse,
right?
So that they're super strong with their vision-based system. So
and AI.
And so you would assume the vision and AI portion of this system is going to be quite strong. But just the novel concept is very intriguing here.
Right.
I think also that the fact that Israel, now it's a technology powerhouse, but at one time it was just solely an agricultural powerhouse. Sure. I mean, it did, it didn't have the technology. So they're playing to this is an intersection of both the strength in agriculture and the strength in technology.
Yeah. So I thought that was another fun rabbit hole to go down to research those guys. And then yet a completely different third vector that I took here in one of the funnest companies to look at, a company out of the Northeast called ULC Technologies. This is a company that we're familiar with doing in-pipe inspection systems. So the innovation is not about that, but they're known for working with cable and gas companies to inspect underground cable and inspect underground pipelines with their in-pipe inspection systems. But this innovation is for something completely different but related. And that's a new machine that they released called the Robotic Roadworks and Excavation System. And really, this is innovative because they take an industrial ABB robot arm. Imagine that, a full-size ABB industrial robot arm. They put it on a mobile tracked platform, put it into the field. And on that platform, there's also a generator. So it's powering the electricity for to run the arm and vision and every and all electronics. This machine is an automated road coring and roadworks excavation system. So the way it works is that it starts by mapping and locating an asset. So it's got a multi-gripper system that it can go pick up a sonar-based and magnetic-based mapping system. So it maps the ground, tries to locate exactly where the pipes are running under the ground. And then from there, it picks up another gripper and it cuts out a core of the asphalt, lifts the core off like a sewer cover. And then it digs and vacuums up all the dirt as it finds its way down to the pipe, exposes the pipe, lets the, you know, the work happen underground. And then when it's time, it refills it, tamps it, and replaces the roadbed. And it's completely automated. So again, an example of innovating a dirty job, maybe not so dangerous, but you know, just does it in a very efficient and effective and elegant way.
And again, folks, we have complete write-ups and analysis of all 50 of these entries. So again, check out the show notes for a link to our digital edition of the RBR 50, as well as the online portion of the awards program here. So I'm going to get into my companies here. Yep. Probably going to shock some folks who have listened to this for some time. Boston Dynamics is not on my list. I know I'm on their payroll, maybe. No, they're not on my list. There's no self-driving cars on my list. So I'm going to start with a Massachusetts-based company. Dan, I think maybe perhaps you've met these guys along the way. They were the first resident startup at Mass Robotics. It's American Robotics. In January 2021, so not just what, five months ago here, they became the first company approved by the FAA to operate fully autonomous drones without visual observers on site. So there's still someone remotely that has to go through a remote check setup process, a checklist basically, to ensure that everything's working properly and monitor it as it's doing its job. But you know, before this approval, the FAA would award, you know, waivers and certifications to certain companies, but they always required visual observers to be stationed somewhere along the flight path of this commercial drone to monitor the drone's airspace. You know, I think back to all these drone delivery videos you've seen. It's kind of fake news to I don't know how else to put it, but oftentimes, most of the time, there's someone, you don't see them on camera, of course, because they're trying to make you think that this is a fully autonomous, there's no one here to make sure that things are going smoothly. That's just not the case. There's always someone somewhere within the vicinity of the drone that can see the drone and make sure that things are going well. And I think that's going to start to change now, thanks to what American Robotics has done with its Scout system. But I think it also shows that the FAA, you know, so long, you know, we've been waiting for this commercial drone market to take off, and everybody's blaming the FAA, and they're slow to approve things, or they're slow to welcome new types of technology. I think this kind of shows that, no, I mean, they're willing to approve commercial drone technology that is worthy of being approved. And American Robotics certainly is worthy of that. And again, they're the first to be approved by the FAA to operate fully autonomous drones without visual observers. Commercial drone market, Dan, you know a lot about this, is estimated to be about $100 billion industry, a massive, massive industry. Yep. And customers have been asking for help and have been waiting for fully autonomous solutions for some time. So American Robotics should have some great running room here for its applications. It targets right now industrial, agricultural, and government applications. And oh, by the way, they were just acquired for $71 million by a large wireless broadband technology company called Ondas Holdings. So they're going to incorporate some of their wireless technology onto these drones and really create a nice solution here for some commercial companies going forward.
Yeah, nice. I mean, you know, you're right, Steve, when you talk about when you were discussing, you know, how long people have been waiting for these solutions. And I know there was a lot of pressure on the FAA and a lot of people kind of up in arms at the speed of this. But, you know, the FAA's job basically is not to approve drone technology. The FAA's job is to make sure that airborne vehicles and their operation is safe. And so this it takes a while. And if you look back at some of the writings going back, you know, you were expecting to see in drones integrated into the commercial space much, much earlier than say 2021, even sure. The area of like, you know, we'll have it all done by 2016. It just didn't happen. It's very similar to what we see with some of the self-driving vehicles, particularly autonomous cars. And so it is a good sign, and it's an indicator of the way things can go and will increasingly will go.
You know, I had a conversation with Helen Greiner a few months back, of course, iRobot fame. She's now at Turtle, making a gardening robot. She also co-founded or founded Sci-Fi Works, a commercial drone company that really pioneered, I think, the tethered drone concept right years ago. And you know, that company never made it. I think its IP was acquired by FLIR a couple of years ago. But I had a conversation with her on a previous podcast episode that you guys should all listen to, where she said when she was running Sci-Fi Works, they weren't even allowed to fly drones in this country. And that wasn't even 10 years ago, she said. So a lot of their work was with the military overseas. So, you know, people say that it's developing slowly, but in less than 10 years, we've gone from not being able to fly drones in this country, commercial drones at all, to, you know, here's a company that was just approved to do it without anybody on site. So hopefully things will pick up here going forward. But the next company for me, a no-brainer, you know, I think we all agree on this one. I don't think anybody, any company has been more innovative this year or perhaps ever than the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which this year they've forever changed space exploration with essentially a near flawless execution of their Mars 2020 mission. We've covered extensively on the robotreport.com. We have a special section for it if you guys want to check it out. But they landed the Perseverance rover on Mars on February 18th, 2021, traveled a measly 292.5 million miles from Earth to get there. This was the fifth robotic rover for them. It's currently searching for previous signs of life on Mars. But also attached to the rover was the Ingenuity helicopter, which has become the first aircraft in the history of the world to make a powered controlled flight on another planet. I'm not going to pretend to understand all that goes into that and the challenges of flying on Mars versus Earth. I understand the basics of that, but Mike, you might know better than me at this point. It's probably completed about 6 or 7 flights at this point. There's been some minor hiccups along the way where they had to do, I think, at least one software update, but just an impressive, impressive mission. The rover itself had autonomous landing capabilities where it could in real time visualize the, you know, Mars as it's approaching Mars, the surface of Mars against its preloaded map, and figure out where is the safest place for this rover to land. Where do I have the best chance of making a successful landing? So, yeah. I mean, sending anything 292.5 million miles away from Earth and safely getting it there is amazing in itself. But just everything else that's taken place on Mars is just absolutely fascinating.
And I think, as Dan mentioned earlier, a lot of that's due to, you know, the improvements in edge computing. So, you know, the processing that's going on in these remote machines is also making a lot of this possible now as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing that I would add to this is, you know, we went through kind of these selection criteria determinants for how we selected the RBR 50 honorees for 2021. And I mentioned business value and commercial viability and aesthetics and so, but actually one of them that we should put down is the ability to inspire and how this drives long-term the robotic sector. And you see that, you know, that in sources of inspiration can come from many places, including things such as movies and that sort of thing. But certainly to see something like the Mars rover for particularly for young people to, you know, to inspire them to go and to get them thinking like, geez, maybe this is something I would like to do. And I think in that sense, it drives the robotic sector overall.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. I watched, if I was smarter, I would I would follow this path. I watched a great documentary. I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast about how they built this Perseverance rover. And just the time crunch and the pressure, the immense pressure that these folks at NASA JPL were under up until really late in the game, they weren't sure that they were going to be able to pull it off. There was basically a cutoff date where they had to, you know, if it doesn't work by this date, we're going to have to delay it for a number of years, I think it was. And it's just amazing to see the difficulties of engineering something like this. It's just amazing to see. I should note before I move to my last company, probably some early front runners for next year's awards program, if we already want to look ahead to that. But China's National Space Administration, they also landed a robotic rover on Mars on May 15th. But again, as Dan eloquently explained before, we have a timeline here, and the landing of their robotic rover was outside of the time frame for the 2021 RBR50, but clearly an early front runner for the 2022 RBR50 Robotics Innovation Awards. In Japan, they're sending a rolling transformable robot to the moon in 2022 to collect data about the moon's surface. They're developing a crude pressurized rover right now, and they say that the data that this robot can collect on the moon is going to help the CNSA developed the autonomous driving and cruising technology for that crewed rover. So perhaps some early front runners for future versions of the RBR50 here, Dan and Mike. And my last company quickly, Open Robotics. Of course, they're the organization behind ROS, the robot operating system. It won for its robotic middleware for healthcare, or ROMI H. For shorthand, it's an open source system built on ROS2, simulated using Gazebo. Essentially what it does, it creates a uniform communication and monitoring system for heterogeneous fleets of robots, as well as sensors and other types of enterprise information systems that a facility might have, might be using in their operation. And Open Robotics recently deployed ROMI H at a hospital in Singapore. Singapore is a very forward-thinking country. They did this in partnership with Singapore's Center for Healthcare Assistive and Robotics Technology and several other organizations. I've talked to Tully Foote and some other ROS stakeholders about this project in the past. And I think here's really why we picked it, and you guys feel free to chime in here. We hear all this talk about interoperability and holy smokes, how are we going to make these heterogeneous fleets possible? You know, this is a problem that's coming down the pipe, whether it's for, you know, a warehouse where a lot of this stuff is happening and exploding, or a manufacturing facility, or maybe it's a farm somewhere outdoors. There's a slew of standards groups that are working on this and trying to come up with a standardized approach to doing this. Well, I mean, look no further than ROS. I mean, they've done this. This is up and running in a hospital network in Singapore. They've made it a reality. So again, we hear all this talk about this is going to be a problem, which, you know, it probably is. But Open Robotics and ROS, they're already doing this in the real world, which is great to see.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? You're starting to see, if you remember a couple of years ago when ROS 2 was launched, and it took that, and that was a late launch. We all expected, we had the first generation of ROS, very kind of tied into academia, not really capable of supporting commercial class applications. And then with the work that was done with ROS 2, including the committees that supported it and the work that's ongoing, it's become much more robust and commercially hardened. And this is an example of something that you couldn't do with the first iteration of ROS that now becomes possible with a more robust version.
All right, so that's nine. We'll just go through nine of the 50 winners. Again, we're not going to go through all 50 winners here. So we encourage you folks to check out the links in the show notes. You can go find our thoughts and our analysis on each of the 50 winners and why they were such innovators in, you know, essentially the past year, and why they were worthy of an RBR50 Robotics Innovation Award this year. But gentlemen, before we sign off, just final thoughts, Dan, just, you know, your final thoughts on the process and the list this year.
Well, I'm very excited. I mean, you know, I think in 2020 we improved the RBR 50 with a new emphasis on innovation, and then this year we made some other changes to improve it again, and next year will even be better. I would let people know right off the bat, this is the awarding for the honorees is not tied to any kind of sponsorship or anything like that. It's not tied to where these companies come from. And then final thing is to remember that we're celebrating innovation here. So we're not really celebrating companies per se, because the companies are responsible largely for these innovations, whether they're business innovations or technology innovations or product or whatever. But we're really celebrating the innovation and the process that got them to that innovation, because that's what drives everything else. And hence the name of the award, the RBR 50 Robotics Innovation Award.
Mike, final thoughts from you. I know you're off tomorrow. You're not going to ghost us, are you? You're going to come back after going through this. Your final thoughts, man.
Well, it was fun. I enjoyed my initiation. But I guess, can we put a stake in the ground? We're going to start a little sooner next year on this process.
Well, we actually are starting sooner, right? I think we've determined, and we're not going to fully get into this, but we're already in the planning stages for a lot of things for 2022, and the RBR 50 is actually going to take place a little bit earlier in the year. We'll start a little bit earlier for a few different reasons that we'll get into sometime in the near future. Good.
It was fun. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot, and again, opened my eyes to a bunch of other application areas in the robotics space. So,
yeah, I agree with both you guys. I think, again, I don't. Dan, did you start this list? I should probably know this. Were you the one who started this?
No, I did not start this list. I launched Robotics Business View, I think, in 2009, and then left to do other things. And then, it was launched. I'm not quite sure how it got launched.
I've done this probably because I was part of the RBR team before it was brought on to WTWH Media. So I probably done this 5 or 6 years, I believe. And, I thought last year was certain, again, Dan, due to your leadership and your sense of sort of, focusing on the innovations was a great move. And I thought that was by far the best list that we've created, but I think this one's even a little bit better.
Yeah. We'll keep improving it every year. And it's a little bit, there's a lot of subjectivity. I know, but we're working to kind of wring that out as much as we can. But in some cases, in terms of things like, for example, stuff that inspires the sector, I mean, those types of things in many cases can't be measured. And the other types of things we look are measurable, or you can quantify them in some way. But there are other things that simply can't be quantified in there, but they're no less impactful for the robotics sector.
So again, congrats to all the 50 winners for this year's RBR 50 Robotics Innovation Awards. Links in the show notes, again, to the digital edition and the online version for all the winners. You can check out the full write-ups for why they were deemed worthy of winning these awards this year, or just head to roboticsbusinessreview.com. And for those who applied but didn't win, take it up with Dan. He's volunteered. Should I give out your email address, Dan?
It's scrow@wtwhmedia.com.
Oh, very good. Well played, sir. Again, there's always next year. Like I said a few minutes ago, we'll be running the contest a little bit earlier next year for a couple of different reasons. So stay tuned for some news on that front. We're hoping to have some RBR 50 winners on the podcast in the coming weeks. So if there's a particular company, maybe it's one of the 9 companies we ran through here today, or maybe it's one of the other 41 winners. If there's anyone that you want to hear from, just let Dan, Mike, or myself know. We'll reach out to those folks and try to get them on. Or if you have any general feedback on the RBR 50 program this year, again, we welcome your thoughts on that. And that's going to do it, folks, for episode 45 of the Robot Report podcast. Thanks again to everyone for tuning in. New episodes of the show drop each week. You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget, 2 more talks in our Robo Business Direct series. We're discussing robotic-assisted surgery with Intuitive Surgical and 3D printed end-of-arm tooling with HP over these last 2 weeks. So make sure you register by visiting robobusinessdirect.com. On behalf of Dan Cara and Mike Oitzman, I'm Steve Crow. Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. We'll talk to you again soon.